Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Happy Saturday again here on Circles of Change. Mark Samuel from Impact Corporations in Los Angeles. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning, Zara.
I can't believe it, boy. It's been 2 weeks since you last came on the show. Of course, it was live then, and I want to thank you again for what a great time we had partnering and sharing the wisdom around accountability with some 150 people here in Tucson, didn't we?
Absolutely. It was so much fun, and I'm honestly, you know, wondering why you're not sitting next to me.
That's exactly right. Well, we need to do that. We will find another reason to attract you back to town. Very good. Well, we're going to make believe that you are, and most listeners wouldn't know the difference, but we kind of do, so we'll just play forward. You know, Mark, we've talked all along the importance when we want to be personally accountable for what we do and get others that we can count on them as well, that it really comes down to this whole idea of successful partnerships, doesn't it?
Yes, and partnering with others is such a tricky thing, whether it's going into business with somebody else or whether it's a relationship that you have with somebody else. Those partnerships are actually quite vulnerable. In fact, you know, I would actually, and I think I saw some research on this, that business partnerships are actually the hardest business models to make work. And I've worked with several and understand why that's the case, just based on, you know, styles and ego issues. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot we can learn in our personal relationships from business partnerships.
And, you know, that's
how those can work.
Because, you know, you do. You have relationships in business that go everything from a partnership to then truly make a decision to merge organizations or merge teams. And let's get serious. What the research will show from my side of the world, of course, this is in my swim lane, definitely, is that there probably really isn't anything such as a true merger. It's just an acquisition in sheep's clothing. And that's,
oh, absolutely.
Right? And that's where this, oh my gosh, so there is going to be who's going to be the one step ahead versus the step behind. And of course, anyone that's been part of an acquisition knows, again, research will bear out that within 2 years, 70% of the spiritually strongest leaders of the firm that was acquired will be gone. I mean, it's just a natural fallout of the dynamic. So our desire, of course, is to build partnerships where that's not the case.
Right, right. And we can, and there's, you know, as you're mentioning here, there's two kinds of, in a sense, partnerships. There's partnerships of teams or organizations, and then there's partnerships of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to at least begin by talking about the individual partnering that we do either in our personal lives or in our business lives, because we can learn a lot just from that, and then we can connect that to, you know, larger, you know, organizational partnering that we may have to do between teams or between organizations.
Well, in fact, really, you'd say that if we don't have skills, insights, and passion and compassion to do it on the individual standpoint first, how in the world can you do it on a bigger network?
Exactly. It just gets more complicated.
Yeah, more complicated.
And the biggest mistake I find people make around partnering is thinking that it's an equal partnership,
mm-hmm.
or that it's, you know, that it's somehow balanced. And there is a balance to it, but it's not necessarily equal in the way we think of it. That, in my mind, really good partnering requires that you play three different roles. And one role is sometimes to be subordinate to your partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And another role is being the leader of your partner. And a third role is actually being, in a sense, you know, an equal to your partner in terms of discussion and decision making. If you're not playing all three roles, I guarantee you're going to get into trouble.
Well, and also having some pretty, as best we can, clear understanding of who's in what role when. And by the way, if conditions change, whose role might have to change.
Exactly. That's and that understanding is absolutely critical, but we almost never have the conversation because we think it should be equal when it was never equal in a sense to begin with.
Or it was always, but I thought we just understood that was the way it was going to be. I mean, how many couples fall into the routine of one partner takes over the entire financial stewardship and keeps the books, whereas the other partner might be, you know, involved with tending to the needs of the children or the elderly or the yard work, who knows? And then something shifts or questions start being asked and you realize, well, gee, is that person withholding information? Or now I don't have access to my monopoly money fund because the other person controls it, whereas the other person says, no, I've been openly leading this. And you want to write the checks, honey, for the bills? Here, have it, man. I don't want to do it anymore.
Well, and this becomes a really important part that you're talking about here, because leadership doesn't mean absolute leadership.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, even though it may be my quote-unquote task to take out the garbage, doesn't mean that I always take out the garbage. And we have to understand where those lines get drawn. Just because you're in charge of the finances doesn't mean that you have 100% charge of the finances. It's like, where does that overlap come in? And maybe it's an 80-20 and maybe it's a 60-40 relationship that we have, but it's all discussed ahead of time so that we're really clear. And as you say, you know, what happens when roles switch?
Yeah.
And that's one reason why you never want to have it 100-0 in terms of that leadership subordinate relationship. You always want to have, you know, either 80-20, 60-40, something along those lines, so that you're not caught off guard and uninvolved.
Or the other side, we'd say, with, you know, take it to a broader context, so that you don't discount the fact that the other partner has some really great innovative ideas or new ways to keep budget or other ideas to go shopping. I mean, look at the task of parenting. I know my husband and I have now two teenage children, but when they were younger and I'd be traveling for a week, you know, who knows what would show up in the, you know, the pantry in terms of my husband doing the grocery shopping. And I remember the first time I came home and said, what in the world are you doing buying this kind of tuna? And I'm thinking, really, Zara? It's this bad about this leader-subordinate thing? I think either kind of tuna probably works. But without saying, and oh, by the way, one time he did buy a tuna that was a heck of a lot better what I'd been stuck in the rut doing, but I wouldn't have known to see that.
Yes. And it also begs the question of, is it fair contribution? And so, you know, well, my task is more important than your task. Boy, that is, again, another, you know, road to disaster. This way, when you talk about roles and you're willing to say, you know what, you get the lead in this one, and therefore if we disagree, we're going to go with your decision, and I get the lead in this area, and if we disagree, you know, at the end of the day, I get to, you know, make the final decision because I'm taking that accountability. That's got to be willing to, you know, both partners have to be willing to do that. And sometimes what I see happen is someone's got the lead, and then someone sort of still dominates because of ego control issues, and boy, that's again road to disaster.
Well, I think the other tricky part, I know what you're going to tell us though, is at the beginning of the day, just at the end of the day, we all bring our beliefs, our value systems, the way we were brought up, how we saw other partnerships be successful or unsuccessful to the party. So, for example, I know you've declared openly that, you know, you were brought up in living as an accommodator. So having been in that role, the idea that maybe you are the leader on a certain given task, but if at the end of the day your partner says, well, we really need to do that, don't you at the same time have to be careful to just not accommodate them but stay true to what you know you think is the right thing to do?
Yes, and that's, you know, that you're really raising an excellent point, and in some ways a great way to even begin, like you said, the partnership. Is let's talk about what our past experiences have been, especially the ones that didn't go well, or the areas of personal growth that we're each working on, so we can support each other and set up the roles to support how we want it to go rather than how it's been in the past that didn't work.
Right on. And so I could say, you know, right now my little voice in my head is now talking to me about a project team that I had that we didn't do this. And oh my goodness, not until we got into some really major pinch points did I realize how we forewent the opportunity to go slow before we started going fast.
Yes, and actually, in your comment about going slow before you go fast actually means you'll end up going so much quicker because mm-hmm. the kind of breakdowns that occur from not doing that waste so much time and cause so much friction that it's really not worth it. Literally, you can create, and I've done this before with groups, literally within 15 minutes to an hour, create agreements that can avoid so many landmines mm-hmm. Down the road that time is so well worth it.
You know, Mark, the...
And yet, how often do we not see it done?
Oh, yeah, of course not. Or we think we did it, but then we don't go back and revisit it when we need to put recovery plans in or when, as you would say, life happens and you have to,
yes.
you know, readjust.
Exactly.
Mark,
exactly.
So the leader, subordinate, and partner in terms of individuals' relationships, you know, you got a couple really key anchoring points you wanted to share on that one?
Well, it's again really, really looking at, especially in business partnering, what are your core competencies? And I like to divide it again by percentages. In other words, something that I'm really excellent at, I'll just call 100%. Something that I'm really good at is 80%. Something that I can get buy-in competently is 60%. And then some of my lesser skilled areas, you know, like maybe it would be editing or something like that would be 40%. And then there's some things that I really don't do well at 20%. But the whole goal is I want the partnership to have as many tasks where we share everything from a 60 to 100%. Mm-hmm. And I've got my 100% areas where I really take the lead. I've got my 80% areas where, you know, I can do a really good job, but if my partner is 100% in that area, we'll tend to give it to that person. But, you know, we can equally share a leadership role. It's just that they're the expert in a sense. And then those areas that are 40 and 60% are areas of my growth opportunities. And I'm a real big believer that while we want to have people do the best, you know, be the best fit, that we ought to always be looking at how we develop ourselves in our 20, 40, and 60% areas to be better. I may admit that I'll never get 100% relative to, you know, people who that's a perfect fit for, but I can certainly get my skill up good enough so that if my partner can't be there, you know, we're on the same page and we're aligned and I've got the capability to step in.
So let me just expand a little bit here because you used the words core competencies and skills. There's another thing we probably want to lay right on top of that, and that would be what am I really, though, naturally gifted and passionate about, right? What comes to be with ease and grace at the same time? And, of course, my terminology would be what are my motivated abilities? Now, I don't want listeners to be confused to say this is what I choose to do and what I don't choose to do. You know, I'm not motivated to take the garbage out today, so bingo, that's yours. But no, truly, when does, you know, doing the dishes comes to me very naturally, truth be told, true. It's because it's a brainless activity that I can then expend a lot of energy at the end of the day and kind of clear my mind. So part of what we should be mindful of, though, is there are instances where that 40-20 stuff that I might have the competencies, I might absolutely have the skill to do it, but I just hate doing it, so that then it won't get the top priority. I won't do it with the flair and savoir-faire or whatever that my partner can. I understand what you're saying, though, in case they are not there, though, I can step in. But wouldn't you also say that our goal should be to always find ways where we can overlap and let our natural things shine as much as we possibly can? Because that which doesn't shine for us could shine for our partner, and if we do it for them, we're not letting them shine as much.
Right, absolutely. And what you're referring to here is what I was referring to as the 100%. Like the areas that I have complete, and I have, my vernacular for it is task passion, where I have competence in it as well as love for it. That's my 100%.
Okay.
And then there's going to be many things that I don't love doing, but I'm really good at it.
Okay.
And that would be my 80%.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else is either 60 or 40, if you will, or 20 in some cases. But again, I really recommend people, because of this changing work environment, that you continue to develop that which is your 40 and 60%, just so that you can stay in the game, because as organizations change a lot, your role might have to change, and you might, for a time, have to do something that isn't your 100% temporarily to get by in a situation. And even in our own businesses, sorry, you know this to be true as well.
Absolutely.
You know, business goes down, you know, sales is not my, certainly not my 80 or 100%. You know, I'm 60% at best, and I'd rather other people do it. But when the economy switched, that became, you know, almost 80% of my role.
Well, and if you think about it, too, from a leadership standpoint, for you to be mindful and aware of how all the different functions contribute to that which you need to do as a team, it's important to have some sense of awareness and understanding of what those tasks feel like, you know, excel at, so you can appreciate and value it. In the same way we go with how you balance within a family, right?
Absolutely. And you know, your point before is I don't want us to miss this at all. How many managers don't know their people well enough to know what they love doing, so they continue to mismatch the fit because they're simply unaware.
And so if you raise that up a level then to partnerships, meaning, you know, a merger between two major teams that have to share a common objective, or two companies, my goodness, we can understand thus the complexity and the necessity to really step back and understand this human dimension if you think at all going to be possible to get sustained performance.
Yeah, and one of the things I see with mergers and acquisitions and those kind of things on an organizational level for a moment is it's more about who dominated the business deal, if you will, as opposed to where's the core competence or where's the core attribute. For instance, I've seen, you know, cultures that were so well tuned and well refined, and people had such high morale and high performance as a result, completely obliterated because the organization that quote unquote merged or acquired them was bigger, and so they went with their system and their culture.
Well, we've also seen too that the reasons for doing the deal or the merger, at the end of the day, in absence of really getting a sense of the human capital factors, don't have legs. They can't sustain. So if you didn't even know, because you end up, you know, for the purpose of synergies or merging, with the best of intentions, by the way, having the wrong people exit or they by choice leave, and then there you are adrift.
Well, I'm not sure it's by the best of intention in many cases. I think a lot of times it's financially driven to reduce costs so that we merge and centralize. But unfortunately, again, there's no assessment as to, you know, where's the greatest competency, skill, performance, culture, what have you. So we just go with whatever the larger group, you know, it's like going with the gorilla.
Yeah, and I think, again, back to the whole topic of establishing successful partnership, that's why, you know, this ties in so nicely, whether it's us assessing how we want to look at the balance of work across our family unit or with our, you know, our life partner, as well as the working relationships.
Yes, and it's, you know, partnership isn't a delegated role. Like so often, even in families, you know, because the parents are the adults, they then dictate what the children are going to do in terms of tasks or whatever. Instead of negotiating, instead of coming up with agreements, instead of saying, okay, here's our choices, which one do you want to do? And let's, you know, and if it's something that we all don't want to do, then great, let's switch it off, you know, and it's done through discussion as opposed to delegation.
So when my dad said, we're going to re-roof the house, and daughter and three sons got on the roof together, there you're off to the races, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And you know, and then again, there's just different considerations. I think in a partnering, you know, like between two adults, I think one of the biggest problems is our interpretation, is our ego. You know, it's like, well, if I don't have control, then I'm not important, or any of... it's kind of like how we translate our issues of both control, being dominated or dominating others, that type of thing. And that really sabotages, again, the relationship if that isn't in balance.
You betcha. Great. Well, Mark, thank you so much. Establishing Successful Partnerships in Business and Our Personal Life. I remind our listeners, you want to visit more about Mark's work at marksamuel.com, as well as highly recommend his new book that, by the way, congratulations again, was named the International Business Book of the Year recently here in Los Angeles. That book, again, is Making Yourself Indispensable, The Power of Personal Accountability. Have a great Saturday, Mark. We'll catch up with you in a couple weeks.
Thanks so much, Zoe.
Be well. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.